everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the TeachNet podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by Irene Stone, who is an assistant principal in St. Mark's Community School in Dublin. Irene, you're very welcome.
Hiya, Michael. Great to be here.
Irene, I know that you gave a really interesting keynote at a recent ACCS event, and one of my colleagues, Pat Brennan, was there. And today we're hopefully going to talk a little bit about what you presented on the day, which was all to do with the area of AI and specifically generative AI. But before we get into that, I wonder, would you just introduce yourself? Hopefully I got your role in the school right and I got the right school and all that correct. And maybe just a little bit of background about yourself, please.
Yes. Yeah, you got the school right, Michael. Yeah, I teach in St. Mark's Community School in Tallaght. That's my main role. And I'm also assistant principal there with responsibilities for teaching and learning. But I didn't start my career in teaching. I actually started as an electronic engineer down in Limerick in a company called Analog Devices. I had a physics and a maths degree. And yeah, I was out of my comfort zone in that role. And when I went into teaching, I taught maths for probably close to 15, 16 years. Then I faced a new challenge in the school when I started teaching the new Leaving Certificate computer science subject. So after 2 years of teaching computer science, I actually worked with IDGE, the teacher support service. I was on full-time secondment with them, supporting teachers of computer science in their professional learning. Yeah, many of those teachers, as you know, they're teaching this subject out of field. And that gave me a unique insight into how people manage stepping into something new. So
that's fantastic. I'm sure your principal there in St. Mark's is holding on to you for dear life with that skill set and that level of experience. That's really, really interesting. And to particularly come from the world of work, of industry, into teaching, and then, as you say, on to IDA, the support service, and get that national feel, must have been amazing, really.
Yeah, no, I mean, every role I've had has definitely offered me lots of insights and different views on how the world works. Even today, I look back at that job I had as an engineer 20 years ago and realize the skills that I picked up in doing that job, you know, in learning how to, I suppose, deal with challenge, but really dealing with problem solving. And, you know, that's what I'm doing at the moment when I'm teaching computer science and mathematics, of course. So with this new technology of AI, you know, we all need to be out of our comfort zone and we need to be comfortable with that. And that was kind of my message at the ACCS conference.
Yeah, it's a great message. I mean, I have a book up here in the shelf beside me, a guy called Michael Arute. I can never pronounce his name properly. And he talks about the whole hot action of teaching and, you know, that you have to be there in the middle when, you know, you've prepared those lessons and you've been up all night creating material, you go in the morning, they're not interested one iota and where you're going, and you have to change midstream. So
we need to teach that to our students as well, Michael. You know, I'm a big believer in creating opportunities for them to, you know, to struggle productively. Yeah. You know, I suppose that's where I'm really interested in the whole area of AI. I didn't mention that when I started working in IDGE, I also started a doctorate in DCU. I'm on the EdD program there. And the amazing professors and lecturers there, they've just instilled in me that drive just to continually question the narrative. And that's kind of where I find myself now.
Yeah, no, and I know a number of those people that you're working with, and they're a great team up there. And I mean, you know, the EdD is the ultimate in work-based learning for teachers. So look, it's great that you're bringing that, your knowledge and your experience into that program. But you mentioned there that you are in the EdD program. So what area, obviously it's AI, and what area are you focusing in on? And also I ask everyone this, why did you focus in on that particular area? So there's two questions there.
Yeah, when I started the EdD, it was August 2022. Initially, I suppose with the EdD, you can be a bit more open with what you want to study or do your research in. You don't have to be as focused as in a PhD. So for me, I just knew it was going to be something to do with learning and in the field of computer science, in particular programming. But then, as you know, November 2022, bang, you know, ChatGPT. And I was like, wow, what is this? And all I could think about was, how is this going to affect how students learn? You know, because if there's something that I'm deeply passionate about, it's in how young people learn. So although my research interests are in generative AI and programming, it's not the Gen AI I'm interested in. It's the learning and how students learn.
Well, again, not everybody likes it when I say this, but for me, teachers are in the learning business. That's what we spend our life at. We're trying to design. I'm a big fan of design. I saw that verb used a lot in your slides. And, you know, the whole notion of designing learning experiences and tasks and trying to motivate them. So I can see strong alignment between generative AI and, you know, what you're trying to do with your learners. And what are you finding out? Are they made for each other, or what's the story with them?
I still don't know, but I suppose when I started to focus in this area, I conducted a scoping review, and I was lucky enough I got to publish a paper in that, and I presented that in a UK Ireland Computer Education Research Conference there recently. But I suppose what that scoping review was for me was trying to find out what the gaps were, right? And obviously there's lots of gaps because it's such a novel area. But what I did find, you know, probably not surprising for novice programmers, that actually a lot of the research would say they shouldn't be using generative AI, you know, that they should pick up the skills first. Of course, there's many benefits as well to using generative AI tools. For me, the biggest takeaway was that much of the research, there's a gap in the research. So a lot of the research focuses on so-called benchmarking papers. You know, they're assessing the quality of the AI tools, and there's a significant lack of research looking at student perceptions, and in particular at second level education. I think I found one paper in the United States for this cohort, and that was a summer school. So we know that UNESCO are calling for more human-centered approaches to research. So this is what I left with this review. Okay, we need a study. We need a study conducted over a longer time scale. We need to find out what are the students experiencing and how will this work in a classroom where they're learning how to program.
And as I said, I had a focus group with a number of students in our senior cycle leaving cert. They were all over 18 for this particular focus group. So they've seen a lot as they've been in the system. Now, two of them are actually studying computer science. And they spoke about, they were very measured, actually, which I thought was great, in relation to their views on these technologies. And again, most of the discussion, this was spring of 2024, was on ChatGPT, the free version. But they spoke about, and they were using it with their teacher, you know, because, and obviously, you know, they're allowed to use it. And they spoke about it as being a teacher in their pocket, you know, that they were, you know, to try things out and if they had problems and that. Do you find in your own school, do your own students, do they use it? Do they find it helpful like that? Or how does it work?
Well, I've had to be really careful with how I've approached this study for ethical reasons. So, I mean, the tool ChatGPT, you know, it does say they have to be over 18. And for those who are above 13 to 18, they need parental permission. So I didn't go near ChatGPT until I'd gone through a full ethical procedures in the school. And my big thing, which I can talk about later if you like, is, you know, I had to teach the students about AI before I wanted them anywhere near using it. So I've only started, Michael, to collect data, so it's still very, very early days.
Yeah.
What I can say is that students are asking deeper questions about AI than I ever anticipated. It gives me a lot of hope.
Yes.
And just because they all claim to have access to AI tools and they do claim to use them or have used them, it doesn't mean that they're using them every day. So I've actually given them a choice in the classroom, and most of them would prefer to use the offline integrated development environment tool to do their Python programming. So I'm really reassured to know that we do need to get beyond this hype and this craziness out there that everybody's using it. And, you know, I can only speak in a computer science classroom, but from my experience, students know it's there, but they're not as hyped up about it as we seem to be.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I found the very same thing. I mean, the students were really, they really had no mass in it, if I'm being honest. One of them actually was not a computer science student, but his point was that what it generated for him, he thought was really poor value,
yes,
really poor. And I think this, and I had another group of teachers that were more in the humanities. One of them was a history teacher, and he's using it. He's teaching them, and as he's teaching them how to use it, which I know you're doing, and I want to come to that. You know, he was saying to me that He was actually hoping that it would hallucinate and that it would give them incorrect information and that they could have, that they could have a critical discussion around it and that they could actually see it in action. And he felt it was creating those, and again, overused word, teachable moments. But I'm wondering, how are you doing it? Where are you coming from with that? And how is that going?
Yeah, so look, it's been very challenging, Michael, because like, how do you do it? Do you just go into the classroom and do you tell them what to prompt? Do you just leave it open? So look, this has been a long design. I'm approaching this using a design-based research approach where the students are placed at the center of the process. I'm following UNESCO guidelines and it's leading from what I found in that scoping review. The students, you know, I'm only in phase one where I'm just kind of scoping out, trying to gather baseline data on their initial attitudes, their understandings, their experiences with AI, you know, an anonymous questionnaire, and then three classes where they're using ChatGPT. But like each of those classes, like in between those classes, I've had to sit down and design how the next lesson's going to go. So it's a very much an iterative process. The next phase will involve them, hopefully, co-creating with me some type of a pedagogical framework or tool or set of guidelines. You know, like, how can we use this tool now to assist us when we're learning to program? And look, maybe number one will be, don't use it. I don't know. I have to see what comes out of this.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to predict what your research is going to find.
Yeah,
but I mean,
I have no idea.
Yeah,
hence
but
the beauty of DBR.
Absolutely, absolutely. But in the particular, you know, you've come from this work space. What I read is, and I follow a particular podcast, it's AI in Education. It's coming out of Australia. But I mean, what I'm hearing is that in the world of work, in programming, this is one of the areas where people are using these tools, supposedly. So I suppose it's about finding out how then we might use them in this particular context, you know, with what you have to teach from a curriculum point of view and the other challenges that we have or issues that we have in our own system. So I think it'll be really, really, really interesting. Tell me a little bit. So you've mentioned there about the UNESCO competency framework for teachers and students. Maybe people may not be familiar with that. Could you say a little bit about that and where you think that might be useful in our context here with teachers? And again, we can put it in the program notes.
I suppose that they're calling for these kind of human-centered approaches, not only for researchers, but also for educators, as they say. You know, we need to put the student at the center. And they also talk about this idea where we have to teach students about AI before they use AI. I was very fortunate, actually, to attend the Council of Europe Working Conference on AI and Education. Like, when I went to this conference, you know, I had some reservations about AI. I mean, I'm questioning myself, you know, my own moral stance and all of this. I'm doing research in this area, and the more I read about it and the more I research about it, I become more kind of uneasy with the whole area. But I have to say I was blown away by being in that room full of almost 100 experts from not only around Europe, but worldwide. And they were all talking about these concerns about AI. So, but their message as well was, you know, we need to teach. Not only do we need to teach about AI before we use it, but teachers ourselves, we need to learn about AI ourselves before we use it. So I just thought that was really insightful.
And this message, and I know a lot of people who were at that particular event, and the Council of Europe, in fairness to them, are doing a lot of interesting work in this area, along with UNESCO.
Yeah.
What do you think? So again, putting your previous hat on from a NIDJA perspective, so what do we need to be teaching our teachers about? What teachers listening to this podcast, what are the areas that they need to be, you know, they need to develop their knowledge in? They probably also need to develop some skills as well. Just even a couple of key ones that they should be thinking about if they are using it or if they think their students are using it in their classrooms, in their schools.
Well, it's about becoming AI literate. We've all heard that phrase before. Like, what it's not about, in my view, and in many other people's views, it's not about using, how do I use these AI tools? It's not about resource generation. And it's not just me saying this. The Council of Europe echoed this message very strongly, that you know, education professionals, school staff, we need to be aware of AI and the ethical challenges it brings to schools. They talk about building AI literacy in two key areas. They talk about the technological dimension, and this is where we focus on understanding AI tools and how they work. And then they talk about the human dimension, which is emphasizing ethical considerations and impacts of AI in education. And then there's many other people who talk about this as well. I'm sure you've heard of Mairead Prashka.
I do, I know Mairead.
So yeah, she talks about, you know, in integrating generative AI, it's about fostering AI literacy. She also says we shouldn't be relying on using the tools just to create stuff, you know.
Yeah, but I'm going to push you on that because, again, I was involved with the department last year on the development of the literacy, numeracy and digital literacy policy. What is, in your view, what is AI literacy? How should we be teaching it? You know, I mean, when we think of literacy, we had the PIAAC results last week for the adults in literacy. We have PISA literacy. So what is AI literacy to you? What are the key notions or concepts that we should be teaching in that, both at the technical and the human level, do you think?
So the first thing I would say, Michael, is I think we need to change our mindsets before we approach this. We have to be comfortable with not being experts, okay? There's no such thing as an AI expert. And I know I did say experts in the room at the Council of Europe, but none of us are experts in this. It's changing so much. I suppose I'm lucky I had that experience of being an engineer and teaching computer science of not being an expert.
Yes.
But many, many teachers are in classrooms teaching a subject they've studied for 4 years. Okay, so they are comfortable in that space. So that's the first message we need to get out there. Step out of your comfort zones. It's okay to not know the answers. I think if we can change that kind of mindset in people, and that's not an easy thing to do, and I don't know how we do that, but I suppose if we're building AI literacy amongst our staff and our schools, we can kind of do it two ways, right? We can talk about the general stuff like what is AI, how does it work, you know, basic stuff. That's something that somebody could be brought in to talk to teachers about, or I'm sure there'd be at least one member of staff who could do that.
Yes.
Use somebody in the school to do that. But it's also about all those human aspects of AI, like environmental concerns.
Yes.
You know, all the ethical concerns. Like there's so much there that we can teach in our different subjects that, and you don't need to know how the AI works to do it, and you don't need to use the AI to do it. Does that make sense?
Well, I would agree with all of that. And I mean, I would say that, you know, when we're using digital technology for many years, none of us, I myself as a primary teacher, I certainly didn't have a degree in technology. But, you know, I think that mindset is critical. And I just, building on what you just said there a moment ago, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that every single teacher in the school, whether they're the math teacher, the geography teacher, the history teacher, the English teacher, the religion, they all should be thinking
Absolutely.
About this.
Yeah, maybe say a bit more on that. So the English teacher, Michael, they could be talking about bias. The religion teacher, I'd imagine, could be talking about philosophical discussions. What is the meaning of intelligence? I mean, only last week I was preparing, and I didn't know a lot of this stuff about AI until I had to start learning it, because I have to teach my students about it because I was expecting them to use it, right? So there's so many really interesting videos out there, you know, the Turing test bias, like the chess game, Deep Blue, all that stuff, right? History, it can come into the history class. The geography, the science teacher, they can talk about the environmental concerns. My eyes have been opened with that recently as well. So,
and of course, politics, you know, I mean, just
absolutely.
Look at the most recent elections.
Yeah. The effect that it's had on social media posts.
So these two young girls that I heard in Helsinki, it actually coincided with the Council of Europe event that you were at. These two young ladies were making this point, and I think it's what you've just been saying there. They said, look, we live in a world where this technology is here. I mean, it is here, and they want to know about it. They don't want to be going on into the world, whether they go off into university, the world of work, or whether they go into further education and training. And they really want to know what it was, how they could use it, where it was appropriate, where it wasn't appropriate. And they didn't want to be trying to figure this out on their own.
Yeah, we have a responsibility. We we're dealing with minors, you know, they're children, they're under 18, and we have a responsibility as teachers, as school leaders, to learn about this and to teach about it. And look, I don't know what the solution is. I think it all comes down to time, as you know, but yes. There's no short of resources out there. You've mentioned the work you're doing with AI for T, isn't it?
AI for T, yeah, that one is finished, and the new one is going to be AI for Digital Literacy, actually. That's going to be the title.
So there's so many good resources out there. So it's just finding the time. But I think a lot of it is that maybe people are just scared of us because they don't understand us. But I think if they learn a little bit about us, you know, and kind of understand how it works, you know.
But let me throw one other thing at you. I agree with that. And I think the time is definitely a challenge with everything. I mean, there's so much. But I think there are ways we can get around that, because this is so relevant. The other piece, though, I'm thinking about is it's just not teachers on their own, surely. I mean, surely the school, the leadership, the department, you know, in terms of policies, guidelines, so that schools and teachers aren't just left to their own devices. Are you seeing any interesting ways that schools as organizations are addressing the use of generative AI to help with this, so that people are able to look at it from a critical perspective? Have you heard or seen anything in that area?
Well, we're still waiting for the guidelines, aren't we, Michael?
April. We still are waiting for the guidelines, April. Irene.
I know people are frustrated with that. And obviously, at the ACCS conference, that was two school leaders, principals and deputies. But I suppose I think I could reassure the room and say it's the same in Europe. It's the same everywhere.
It is.
That there is a lack of clear guidance. It's not just a national issue. But we have lots of guidelines, Michael, we can fall back on. We've the digital strategy for schools, okay? We have LAOS, looking at our schools, talks about student agency, teacher agency. So we can use this, you know, to try and empower the teachers in our schools to teach about this stuff. Education for Sustainable Development Goals, you know?
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I'm nodding here frantically. Yeah, I mean, I think from a policy point of view, actually, we in Ireland are quite strong. We have quite
a lot of, and
as you've just addressed there, I mean, this is not a technology issue. I mean, it's a technology, but it's having much wider impacts. And I think, you know, as you said, there's so many other areas here that we can address. And you mentioned the digital learning framework just fits right on top of that. I mean, you can use those as ways to have critical discussions. Actually, one of the things that came out of that JRC research was some of the schools that were saying that, you know, they talked about training and professional learning and professional development, whatever word we're going to use here. And one of them said, actually, what we would like, and it's a bit like what you're saying about the students, is that before we do anything, we have somebody that comes in and almost mediates a critical discussion among the school staff about what this is, where it could work, where it doesn't work, so that, you know, people get a chance to ask questions, to listen, and it's more democratic. I suppose I'm going to finish up because this has been really, really interesting. And if I was a school listening to this, would you be able to give me any suggestions, say, for the new term after Christmas in January? Maybe some things that they might do or they might look at in this area so that they can move their practice along and start developing that AI literacy that you've mentioned already.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I can't tell schools to take time, but I think if schools had, you know, a 2-hour window where they could get together as a staff and even just watch one or two of these videos that are available online that could teach them about AI and what is it. And just, you know, they could use some questions, you know, try and question what subject areas could we bring in a bit of AI. As I mentioned before, whether it's environmental concerns or the history of AI, just even where to find these type of resources. But just giving teachers time to look at these, because I don't think they know that they're there.
Yes.
The CPD that I see out there, it's all focused on the tools.
Yes.
There's a lack of CPD based around the pedagogy behind it. So we just need to get the message out there. You know, we need to teach about AI before we use it. And we need to learn about AI before we use it.
Say a little bit more about the pedagogy. What are you thinking about there when you talk about the pedagogy around generative AI?
Well, if I think about how I'm using it in my classroom, I can only speak from experience. But I'm getting in there with the students and I'm learning with them. And I have to be critical of these tools. I'm not just going in there saying that these are amazing. So we're exploring them together. We're looking at how they work together. If they're sitting there, and I have to give them a choice. I'm not telling them you have to use ChatGPT. Yes. I'm saying in these three classes that we're using this tool, I'm saying this is here beside you as an additional tool, but I'm still using my other pedagogical approaches. You know, Prim is one in programming where they predict what the code does before they run it. So, you know, I'm still teaching the way I normally teach or facilitate, I like to say, but we just have this tool sitting on the side.
So if I'm to finish, and I think that's a brilliant example of it. I mean, so it's there. It's another tool in your toolbox. It's there. It's another option. But you've given them choices. And look, this is what this is all about. You're giving them choices and you're teaching them, if they do use it, that, you know, how to use it, how to make judgments on what it creates and all of that. Sounds like that to me. But ultimately, they're the ones who are going to be the human in the loop, as the JRC calls it. You mentioned human-centric. Yep. You know, that it's the human is making the decision at the end of the day, and you're not just taking what you get from any of these tools and just taking it as the truth or gospel or whatever word you want to use on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Look, I think we'll leave it there. Thanks a million, Irene. And I think we'll be looking forward to some of the publications from this because, as you said at the outset, there's so little research in this area. There's an awful lot of people speculating. They're making assumptions about what's going on, but we don't actually have any hard data on it. So I think it's wonderful and sounds like your research, and I know you've published some papers already, is the start of this area, and I'm sure it'll keep you busy for a long time to come. So, Irene, thank you very much.
Michael, thanks very much for having me.